Hey, it's another episode of No Tippy Tappy Football brought to you by William Hill. Sam, you're here. Did you have a lovely time at Cheltenham?
Oh, what a day. Thursday, went down to Cheltenham and I think that never expecting what was going to happen, of course. Alex was already there. And he just said, look, three horses he had that day. You know, take it easy, get each way on them because they're pretty big odds, you know. So we end up with the winner, back-to-back winners with Memorial and Protectorat. I don't know where he gets these names from. You know what I mean? So back-to-back wins is absolutely unbelievable, like you mean. So that went for a good day. So I didn't need to bet much after that, just a little flutter here and there because I'd made enough for me. Never won as much money.
Well, I went on Friday, Sam, and I won £8.50, which I was pretty chuffed about.
Very good.
But I saw your pictures and you looked like you'd had a great time.
Well, yeah, I mean, we could obviously get in the ring after, like you mean, so the parade ring when they would. And the excitement and the atmosphere, just fantastic, you know what I mean? And I mean, they'd been down there for 2 days, 3 days, is it? I mean, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and came back. Yeah. So I just did the one day and really, really, really enjoyed it.
We need to do a No Tippy Tappy Football day out to Cheltenham next year and
very good idea.
Call it work next time. Well, we are joined by a very special guest today. I'm very excited about this. Would you like to introduce him?
Yes, many, many years we have passed in the football terms, and we've exchanged ideas and talked about what's happening in football and in life sometimes, like I mean. And I have to say, before I introduce him, it's the only three-course meal you can get after you finish the game.
With him?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can go into his office, have a drink, and you can sit down and go, get tucked in, lads. Obviously, the lads who are waiting that a little bit longer on the coach are not too happy with you. But, win, lose or draw, it's always nice to be invited in. And then obviously nobody else invites you in and offers so much food as Tony does. So it's Tony Pulis. Thank you very much for coming, Tony. Great to see you.
No problem,
as always.
Sam.
Welcome, Tony. So you like a three-course meal after a game?
No, I always thought it was, from starting from a very, very young age, to go in and speak to other managers. I think there's obviously a connection. For 90 minutes, you want to be the best you possibly can, and your opponent wants to be the best they possibly can, and it can get a bit of friction between you at times, as me and Sam have had. But after the game, it's all over, and a drink and a bite to eat. And I always thought, and Peter Coates was fabulous at this, when we got in the Premiership, everything went through the roof at Stoke. So the boardroom was redone, the food was first class and everything else. And I just said to him, Peter, any chance of us doing exactly the same over there? We've got the managers and the coaches. You've got your directors and you've got your group of people that you entertain. It'd be really nice if we could do the same this side. And then people will go away and won't forget the hospitality that we've given them.
And they haven't.
No, I know. And that's, Sam will be one of many people who say that we never get that at other football clubs. But it was brilliant, Sam, wasn't it?
Well, it was, yeah. I mean, it's like we've said before, as time moves on, it doesn't happen anymore. Culture are different. Some of the foreign coaches accept it and start enjoying it, coming in. Some never, you'll never, ever see. And then there's the other side, is once you've finished doing your media work, it's there is little or no time to spend together. And that's, it's quite sad from that point of view, because... over the years, that period after the game can be half an hour, could end up being an hour, depending on
how
we go on, how you get on with the manager and what you're talking about, and because you won't see him again till when they come to your end, or there's an LMA meeting or there's a Football League meeting, and you might bump into each other then.
I just think that from our era, Sam's in the 50s, I'm in the 50s. There was that community and that togetherness. And we were brought up, really, people, I sit on a, a train now and everybody's on their phones. Nobody talks to one another. We came through a period where communities and togetherness in this country was very important. We used to go to Lillishall. You know,
yeah,
I was 26, 27 the first time I went. And it was a week's course with the best coaches working. But all the coaches went. You know, we were booking this up 6-7 months in advance to make sure we got a place.
That's right.
To get there. And then you've, you know, I'm sat down with Bobby Robson, you know, Teddy Venables, George Graham. And then you've got the coaches. You've got Dave Sexton working, Don Howe. Yeah. You've got all the top coaches in the country and in the world, I thought, you know, putting sessions on and you're there. And afterwards, Sam, you go and have a drink. You know, you'd have a good chat. And that, you know, that was English football. That was the way it was. And it was, that week was most probably one of the great weeks.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
In the calendar.
Before we get into any more, and we've got to get some cover stuff right off at the start, as we like to do, yeah. Sam. So first of all, Tony, we've had loads of questions in. We always take listener questions. You can always tweet us or put a comment on one of our YouTube videos and ask our guests questions. So Mike and Carl and many others immediately want to know if you would ever return to Stoke or Plymouth.
No, I'm what's name. I'm very, very happy. I've been very fortunate with the career I've had. I've had my go. And it's been fantastic and I've really enjoyed it. But I've got other things now that I'm doing. I've got 7 grandchildren. I've got 2 in America. My son's at Salt Lake City. We're going over there next week. We'll have 3 weeks over there and, enjoy it, watching they play a game. We'll drop down. They've not moved collectively as a family yet. So Anthony's wife is still in Florida. We'll go and spend a week with Laura and the babes. And then Debbie's sister has lived at Cocoa Beach for 30-odd years. So we'll go there.
So
there's stuff going on in my life that keeps me going and keeps me happy. I get lots of people ringing me up about lots of things in football. I've got about 4 or 5 people who have been into management who I manage. So they ring up. Some will have the same. They ring up. They've got this problem or that problem. I'm touching it, but I'm not right into it. And, I just don't see myself wanting to be 100% involved again. I'm quite happy the way it is at the moment.
Sounds like a lovely balance you've got right now. I'll turn this way now because I know the answer will be different. I like to check in on you. So Natalie would like to know, has your phone been ringing lately, Sam?
It hasn't, no.
Okay.
I normally get my first phone call normally is from my agent and says that I've had a call of your maybe possibly your interest in this position. Like most things in football, the longer it goes on, the less you get.
I got sacked at Bournemouth and Jim Smith rang me up out of the blue, just rang me up, told Jim Smith in his groggy voice.
Yeah.
And he says, son, let me tell you, you're not a manager until you get sacked 3 times.
Yeah,
put the phone down.
That's it.
I couldn't even get a word back. That was it. Put it down. Mm. He just feet back on the ground, get back up on the oars, mate.
There's nothing more devastating the first time.
Oh. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Nothing more, but anyway.
Okay, so that's good. No Tippy Tappy continues for the foreseeable. We also need to say congratulations to Gary Rowett.
Gary, another man that's got a job, eh?
So, last night...
You might get off the load of jobs now.
Tony, we've got something
we've got
to tell
so
you.
Many.
We've got to warn you here.
You go through them.
Yes, so Gary went back into management last night to the end of the season with Birmingham. Gary was a guest here on our show about a month ago. When I heard that, we started to count back. We are now on 10 guests that have got a job shortly after being on the podcast, Tony.
Yep.
So do you want to try? Do you think we can... Well,
so
you,
any lads out there fancy coming on who I know? Yeah. If I don't know. You're in football, you got sacked or whatever you got sacked for what you did. Get on this podcast. You'll get yourself a job. Come on.
Okay, we've got Sam Allardyce, Carl Robinson, Duncan Ferguson, Robbie Fowler, Gary Rowett, Phil Brown, Dean Holden.
Blimey.
I'm including Mark Clattenburg, who got a job on Gladiators after he was on here.
And now he's at Nottingham Forest.
Yes. And I'm including Billy Sharp, who wasn't playing football, came on here and then got a contract. And there's one other that we're missing. because it was 10.
Your memory's better.
We'll try and remember. But we are up to 10, Tony. Research. So, yes.
Research.
Up to 10.
Yeah, keep me
Scott
out of
Brown.
It.
Scott Brown.
Scott Brown.
Air United manager. Yeah, okay. Yes. So you don't want our luck there, Tony, no.
Pass it on to Sam. Sam will have another go.
Yes. So in terms of, I mean, your experience is vast, Tony. I mean, a long managerial career. I want to say 25 plus.
Nearly 30 years.
Years. What would you say has been the biggest change in management since you started managing to now?
There's so many great changes. There's some, you know, you have a look at the training facilities to start with. Mm. We used to train when I was at Bournemouth, we'd train over the park. You know, when I went to Gillingham initially, there was no training ground whatsoever. We used to take the goals off the pitch and the groundsman would take it up on a blinking big cart, take it up and put the goals out on a park. And I can remember doing sessions sound like 10 against 10 and people walking through the park. And I can remember stopping this old fella the one day and he went, "Oi, don't stop me. I've been walking up and down here for 30 years, mate." And you just go, "Okay, no problems." So the facilities are just unbelievable. I think the knowledge physically, you know, food-wise, physically, you know, everything has changed. The grounds, the pitches have been, you know.
For the better.
Less violence.
Which is a big thing.
Yeah. And the game itself, the game has got a little bit, I think we've become too precious. I think this country has always been renowned for being competitive and playing with spirit and playing with pace and power. And I think that's dropped off a little bit. I watch some games at times and I've got to be honest, when the two centre halves and the goalkeeper have more touches of the ball than the centre forwards, it just goes against the grain for me, being who I was. I was brought up as a very honest, hard-working type of player to be given, as soon as I won the ball, give it to someone who could play and get it to them as quickly as you possibly can. You have a look now, and like I say, I can sit down and I can watch a game and, you know, after 10 minutes, quarter of an hour, this is not long ago, there was a derby match on the game. I watched it for 15 minutes and I turned it off. There wasn't a challenge. There wasn't a tackle. There wasn't anything that you thought, blimey, this is special for the area. And I think we've lost that a little bit. Some of the football is fantastic. You know, when Man City play through the pitch, when they play through the pitch and they do it quickly, you know, it's brilliant to watch. You know, the top teams obviously do it well when they do it. But I do miss that spirit and that pace and power and the excitement of balls going in the box and defenders having to defend.
I'm still waiting for the research on that because I still believe, and nobody will convince me unless they be shown with stats, real stats, not ones that have been doctored. Right? Because, you know what I mean?
Conspiracy, Sam. Conspiracy, Sam. There's a lot of that going on.
To promote what they want to promote.
Yeah, of course.
They will put the right way, but I'm still trying to find the right stats to say, playing out from the back, you concede more goals than you score.
Yeah.
And I still think that's the case now. And certainly now they've adopted it all the way down in every division.
Yeah.
That certainly would be the case.
I've got no problems. If you've got the best players in the world and
absolutely,
they want to build up from
we'd
the back,
do that.
Brilliant.
We all do it.
But if you haven't got the best players in the world and you keep giving the thing away and you put people under pressure or you do it because everybody else is doing it, which again goes against the grain with me because I didn't care about what everybody else. I just do what I thought was right to win football matches. Because I've said this to loads of young managers who ring me up. The bottom line is, if you don't win football matches, you're in the winning business. Yeah. If you don't win football matches, you ain't going to be in it very long. So you need to find out what your strengths are and play to your strengths. Don't worry about what other people do and what they don't
then
do.
Then you can change it and make it yourself better. Fergie,
when I got promoted at Stoke, I rang Steve Coppell up at Reading. Steve had just got relegated. And I rung Sir Alex up. And I spoke to Steve and Steve said, "Tone, 5 or 6 games, you could be in the top 10. And then you have a run of Man United, Man City, Chelsea, Arsenal, and you might pick 1 point up and you're 2 points off the bottom three." Yeah. So, you know, it's so
swings and roundabout,
unbelievable. I rung Sir Alex up. He said, "Tone, senior team, I think you're going to struggle. Your big chance is make the Britannia a place where nobody wants to go. And let me just tell you this now, if any of the top teams go there and praise you, you're not doing it right.
Correct.
And I never forgot it. Yeah. So we narrowed the pitch in, grew the grass, brought Rory into play.
Stoke on a Tuesday night is still a thing, Tony.
And we found a way to win. And people used to, you know, moan and groan and criticise. We go to Arsenal, biggest pitch in the league. Grass would be cut like a billiard green. You know, be watered before the game. They had the best players. Their budgets were 4 or 5 times more than what ours. I never said a word. I never used to come out and say, this is not fair. They'd come to our place and be a smaller pitch. The pitch wouldn't be like a billiard board. We'd play a little bit differently. And they'd moan like
He moaned that much, and he got the rules changed him. Because they brought in a grass size.
No, they didn't.
They did.
Yeah, they did.
They brought in a grass size.
Oh, no, I do know about
so
this,
they'd come along, and then the referee had a little chill like that and put it in the game to see whether you're above that marker, and you'd get, like, fined or whatever it was, like you mean.
It's so interesting, the kind of what you did at Stoke and hearing what you say there about making it a stadium, making it a place where people didn't want to come.
Yeah, it was... I don't think I've ever been at a football ground where the crowd and the team were so together.
Together, yeah.
It was just unbelievable.
How much it helps as well.
It was fabulous, Sam. Mm. The 3 years that, you know, it waned a little bit after the third year, which normally would, but for 3 years, you know, we'd play the top teams and the place, it just lightened up. You know, I can remember playing Man City, beating Man City 1-0. James Beattie scored a goal at the back post and I think Wilkinson got sent off. We played all second half with 10 men. Every tackle, every challenge, every pass we made.
The fans.
It was like as though we were scoring goals every second. It was just extraordinary. You know, to have that as a manager, to have actually experienced the togetherness that we had at Stoke. It was just absolutely fantastic.
Great, the Premier League, wasn't it? Then, I mean,
it's still Sam. It's still fantastic.
So lucky to have this time in our era.
Yeah,
that we've got managed to end up going to the top end of where we've got and staying there for a considerable amount of time. Like, I mean, so you know, irrespective of how much it changed, which has to bring me on to a subject that probably not on there because I was listening on the radio, which is governance.
Oh,
which I object to strongly. I think a government official to come and do government in football with the state of the government is hypocritical, to say the least. And who is going to be qualified enough? Who is going to be qualified enough? Who is going to be intelligent enough to tell somebody how to run their business or how to get their money
away? You would hope, Sam, that they would get football people involved in it. If they're gonna come in and govern it, then you would hope and pray that they're sensible enough to pick people who've been in the game for a long time, who can sit alongside them and tell them the way it's run, the way it should be run, and the improvements that is needed.
I think the only thing that I was listening to Rick Parry this morning coming in, and the only thing I agree with him on is that the government can do far more in-depth research into new owners than the EFL can, or the Premier League. So if you're looking at that in itself is going to stop bad ownership that we've experienced over some of the years. I mean, the club I love the most nearly went under.
Yeah,
it was two days away. Bury went.
Yeah,
and Bolton was 2 days away, but for lots of people writing money off.
Yeah,
it would have gone.
Yeah,
there's a lot of them now. You know what I mean? A lot of clubs in danger.
So that's that person that takes over isn't being looked into, and the rules of the involvement in or taking over the football club should be to see his financial backing, to see that he's got the money, to see that he has to support the club for. You'd put a figure on it and say at least 3 years.
Mm. Yeah.
I love hearing you both talk about it because it's not something we often talk about, and it's kind of the
it's a bit deep, this one. I like deep.
Hey Sam,
I think
the big thing with it, with the talk now of getting people in from the government, I think we've I'll be banging the drum for, you know, that to look at that situation.
Well, clearly we need people like Tony Pulis and Sam Allardyce to be involved in it to make sure it goes in the right direction, because I think all of our hearts are in the right place.
We love football. That's what we do. We love
football clubs to be saved and kids to be looked after. So a serious conversation for once on this podcast. I'm going to pull it back to non-serious stuff now. No, I mean, I think this is fairly serious, because you mentioned Rory Delap before.
Yes.
Often when we think of your Stoke team, we think of
Rory.
And the throwing.
Yeah. Now, something that we often hear, Tony, is that opponents came to you and preferred to get a corner than knock it out for a throw-in.
True.
Statistically, statistically, what? I mean, did you do that, Sam?
Yeah, true,
statistically,
true.
Was it better?
True, yeah.
Rory's... the story about Rory is that we got promoted. I didn't even know he had a long throw. And that right at the beginning of the season, the Premier League season, Kempy's over the far side. I think I was talking to the Sorensen and Begovic about something. I can't remember. Anyway, Kempy walks over and he says, the lads are having a competition. It's 50 quid, they're betting 50 quid who can throw the ball the furthest.
Yeah.
So, and he says, Rory's thrown it off the pitch. I went, what? He went, come and have a look. So we got him, and he was a javelin thrower. He was for Carlisle, you know.
That's okay.
So we had what they call ambidextrous shoulders. So he could really. So I'm looking at him, I'm thinking, Rory, where's that come from? So he tells me about his background and this, that, and the other. And then we, can you throw it in flat? And he says, I can throw it anywhere you want. You know, I could throw it to the back post. I just want it thrown as flat as you can across that near post. Mm. And we spent quite a bit of time working on a little bit of movement, make sure things were in place. Yeah, and it was fantastic for us.
I didn't like the fact that you used to get, I had the same problem. Oh, he just uses a long throw and he just boots it up the pitch and he just does it. You know, and then all of a sudden there's a change around by everybody going, well, you know, look how invaluable set plays are today. Set plays are 30, I don't know what it is now.
38%, Sam.
Yeah, 38%. Yeah, I think you're right, Tony. So if you've got Rory Delap's long throw, which is a set play, you're probably going to take your percentage rate of goals past 40%, because this is such a tool.
Yeah.
Because throwing with your hands is far more controllable than kicking a ball with your feet, no matter how clever a player is.
Zola was manager at West Ham. We played there on a Monday night. This is God's honest. We get there and they've moved the boards to the edge of the box.
Yeah, so you couldn't have a long
throw. Yeah. So we're out on the pitch. So Rory comes over to me. He said, have you seen where they put the balls? I said, yeah. Not an issue.
What, he didn't need a run-up?
First throwing we had, Rick comes in, flicks it in, but he threw it behind the board. Didn't go anywhere near the line. He actually threw it from behind the board. Same
brilliant
distance, same flatness. Yeah, unbelievable. And it wasn't Gianfranco. I spoke to Gianfranco afterwards, and it wasn't him who moved the boards. It was someone upstairs.
Did David Sullivan that? He'd taken over then, hadn't he, I think.
Rory not doing long throws then until that point?
I'd never, in the Championship, I'd never seen Rory throw a ball.
We had JJ Okocha.
Tell us about JJ's long throws.
And I'm Bob, I've always gone in and like, anybody got a long throw? I said, have you ever used it? No. I said, let's have a look then. So we anybody else, whether it were two, three or four,
yeah,
we just go like, by the corner flag line, you know, right, you're on the throw. Yeah. And what that used to give us the opportunity to, you'd throw the first two or three. And then the second one, somebody drops your...
Yeah, and then you could play
and
it.
And whap it in the box. Because everybody was stuck in there. And they think, it's going to be another long throw.
Yeah.
So it wasn't always a long throw. It was just suck everybody in there. Then we'll just do that.
Yeah.
We'll just diversify into...
And if you haven't got it, you work harder on other... You know, I went to Crystal Palace. Yeah, we didn't have long throws. But we worked very hard on other set plays. Went to West Brom, we didn't have a long throw. So we worked hard on... I think the second year at West Brom or the third year at West Brom. We scored nearly 40% of our goals from set plays, you know, but Dawson, Olsen, McCauley, Evans, we had a big team there. But, you know, the set plays, Brunty and James Morrison and Gads, great delivery. And we used to work for a long time on set plays.
You mentioned earlier about Arsene Wenger wanting to changing the rules on grass. He's been vocal recently. I just find this so mad about changing throw-ins to kick-ins.
Yeah. Rubbish. He was talking about that when
rubbish.
I was managing it.
It just takes a lot longer. And nobody wants anything to be longer or take more time because it can't be rolling. It got to be still. I'm in the right spot. You got to walk back, look up. You can pick the ball up. And
I don't think there's a great deal.
That's a great need for that.
Football, you know, with throwing. Throw-ins have been part of the game since it started. So I totally disagree with that. You're just going on about someone going into a job and almost building or trying to build. Talk about referees, and I don't like bringing up referees and this, that, and the other. But VAR, they tell me that VAR is. You know, is wrong. I don't think VAR's wrong. I think VAR's good. I think people who use it. and what's happened is it was for clear and obvious mistakes. Now, if you look at Lampard's effort in the World Cup, that it's the underside of the bar and goes over, that's a goal. You could go back and say, listen, that's a goal. If you have a look at Thierry Henry's handball against Ireland, that's a goal. That's clear and obvious. When you're taking 4 or 5 minutes, to actually analyse.
It's not clear and obvious.
It's not clear and obvious, but Sam, what has happened is the referees have built up an industry. They've got about 10 other people doing stuff. So all of a sudden, you've got this industry that started up that they feel as though they've got to justify themselves. I think, you know, there has to be someone sensible to go in there and just say, listen, we're killing the game. People are scoring goals now, not celebrating. Every time I watch a game on a TV and every time there's a goal, you're going, are they going to get VAR involved?
Yeah.
And nearly 90% of the time now, they're doing it anyway.
Yeah.
And you think, what are you doing it for? It's not clear and obvious.
No. But they have
the
bill.
I heard a wonderful line at the weekend, Sam. It was described as, are they looking for handball or fingerprints?
Yeah, very good.
Please excuse me, I just want to stop this episode quickly because Big Sam and I just want to say a huge thank you to you for supporting No Tippy Tappy Football, whether you are listening or watching or doing both. Sam and I absolutely love doing this podcast and we couldn't do it without you. So take a second, please, and subscribe or follow wherever you are watching or listening to us. We're also on Twitter, No Tippy Tappy Football, and we have our own YouTube channel. I know everybody says it, but it really would mean a lot to us and it means that we can keep getting bigger and better guests the more followers and the more subscribers we have. And then you can go and tell all your mates that you've done Big Sam a favour. So thank you for listening.
So I spoke to, it might have been Mick McCarthy.
Mick McCarthy, yeah.
He's in the championship and we're talking about referees and he's going, God, he is absolutely, honestly, every time we get him, something goes wrong and this, that, and the other. So I said, well, you get a chance to vote, don't you, at the end of the year? He said, yeah, give him top marks. He said, I want him to go in the Premiership so we can mess up the Premier. He says, the best referees are Markham Low so they can stay down with us.
Really?
So, yeah. I just think it is a really, really tough job without a question of a doubt. I wouldn't want to do it for all the money in the world. But I think there's got to be a way of finding a solution to, because we've got VAR now, of making it easier for the referees. I think sometimes I look at games and I don't think they're refereeing it. I think people in their ear are refereeing the games, and that can't be right, Sam. You know, we didn't bring VAR in for that. Like I say, clear and obvious decisions. Yeah. And let the game flow, let the crowd, you know, when you score a goal, let's get back to the crowds.
Oh, absolutely.
Thinking it is a goal and not, oh my God, we've got to wait now for VAR to check it and this. You know, 10 minutes later, they're clapping and cheering.
As a fan, Tony,
we're going to miking up next time, aren't we?
Weird.
That's the trouble.
I'm kind of here for that.
But, you're marking up a referee, or you're asking a referee to come out and speak after a game. Ah.
Rugby union do it. Rugby
league.
Yeah,
but they're not under the same pressure, Tony.
Yeah.
Their game in terms of pressure, to the pressure of the Premier League particularly, is just nowhere near.
Yeah.
Nowhere near. And, of course, it's straightforward in rugby.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a slow game. It's
more stop start game
like NFL. It's got no deviation. They try and do this. It's got the, then there's a bit of skill here and there, and they move the ball in. But so it's easy to referee because it stops and starts all the time. Football changes direction, goes this way, that way, and every single way. So it's much more difficult to be a referee.
That makes me think, Tony. Didn't Arsene Wenger describe your team as a rugby team once?
Yes, and all our supporters used to enjoy when he came down to the break or the Bet365. Throwing that down is so. Yeah, I can remember. Again, this is another story. I did a coaching session at Cardiff, and Patrick Vieira was on the course with Jan Leesman, the goalkeeper, yeah. And they waited for me afterwards. I did a session on the pitch, then went in and did a little seminar. They waited for me afterwards, and they were chatting away, having a laugh about the rivalry, really, because there shouldn't really have been a rivalry between Stoke and Arsenal. And it was built up, obviously, because every time they came to the Britannia or the Bet365 stadium, I don't think they beat us, Sam. I think it was...
Well, he needed to find another excuse, and that's what he used to do.
Patrick said the first time he'd ever did any coaching, we played him in a cup game, I think third, fourth round of the FA Cup, and he pulled the lads together on the Thursday and the Friday and said, well, they're going to throw this ball, so this is where I want you. We've looked at the Baldy had looked at where we positioned our players. Anyway, they turn up. Patrick said, we turn up and Rory ain't playing. So he said, we still got beat 3-1. So I said, yeah, then he blamed the grass.
Have you ever seen him since?
He was a great manager, though. Like, unbelievable manager. I mean, he was. Yeah. He was
and Arsenal, good at the time. What a fabulous football club that is. Yeah.
Have you seen him since management? Is it all
I've spoken to him over, not actually been in his company, but actually over communications with TV and all. Yeah, he'd be fine.
You and Arsene get on these days?
Well, a lot better, yeah. In the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not in the beginning. But in the end.
The success you had with Stoke, though, I think
respect
sometimes...
Respect I always had.
Respect for Arsene.
Always. Yeah. No, he's a
fabulous. Same with Rafa and Emi running with him. My respect for him as a manager. But don't do what you try and do.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're going to try and...
Yeah.
I mean, your success with Bolton, your success with Stoke. I mean, I think sometimes we forget how well they did. I mean, you got Stoke into Europe and you're looking at the difference from when you sort of took over. So your first, some of your first signings at Stoke, Picard, Whitley, Higginbottom, Fuller... Some of your final signings at Stoke were like Michael Owen, Charlie Adam, Peter Crouch. Like the development of your time at Stoke was
well. We signed Matthew Upson, Jonathan Woodgate, Michael, Good Johnson came as well. We got into Europe, and I think that year we played something like 56 games. We got to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. Liverpool beat us 2-1 at Anfield. We played Valencia in the 16s, in the last 16 in Europe, I think. And then, obviously, we finished very comfortable in the league as well. So, you know, we had to have a number of players. So those players were brought in short-term more than anything. They'd all been good pros. You know, Matty Upson and Woody were fabulous people to work for. Michael had just come to that, you know, but it was good to have him around, you know, have Michael around the place. So we brought players in, really, to actually,
you need two squads, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. Actually,
you're going to call. I've said this before.
Fill it up.
Yeah.
You have to. Otherwise, I mean, you know, the throwing in about Newcastle again. They never give him enough squad.
Yeah, yeah.
To cope with Champions League,
yeah.
FA Cup, Carling Cup, and League.
Yeah.
And now they are where they are because the squad's not big enough.
I still think he's done a fantastic job, Sam.
Yeah, but as usual, though, now the speculation about. Because he's had such a great season. Like, I mean, yeah. I hope the owners are not thinking about, or anybody's thinking about changing him just yet.
Yeah.
But the problem you've got is that Eddie's overachieved.
Of course he
has. Massively. Yeah. And then once you feed people steak, you know, we're going back to mince pies, it's not easy. So they just want that. I think he's a smashing manager. He's a good person as well. And he's got a great club. It's a great vehicle to be in, to drive. And I think they should give him the opportunity and chance. He's had this little blip. I think he's bad run of injuries. Like Sam said, the squad is not as in-depth as it should be to cope with all what they've coped with this year. Eddie would have learned by it. I'm convinced, being in Europe, That would have been his first time, most probably, in Europe. So, you know, I hope we need more British managers in the Premier League. We need, and there's some, you know, exceptional talent, British talent in the lower leagues. Whereas, you know, before maybe you could take a team up and then you'd be in the Premiership. And it was difficult even our time, Sam, wasn't it, to get into the Premiership.
But it was the only way you could get there.
And it's got, then. I think it's got even tougher.
You often say that, don't you, about, yes, about that. Some of the other things you're remembered from for Stoke, and I say this with the greatest respect, Tony, you had your own song that people would sing about you.
Yeah.
I don't know many managers that have got their own song. Did you ever have your own song?
No.
Don't ask me to sing it. tone death.
Did you ever go shopping in the club shop?
I never went shopping anywhere. My wife will most probably listen to this. Debbie does everything for me. And I mean everything apart from, you know, the football, which I've obviously loved over years and years and years. She's brought the family up. And she certainly looked after all the stuff I'm wearing today, Deb had bought.
Very smart. Yes, very smart. Is it true as well that you used to call your Stoke team Battersea Dogs Home?
No, I did say that. I said, I can't remember who we played the one day. I hope it wasn't Arsenal again. But it was one of them where, we're not buying at Crufts. We got the Battersea Dogs Homes and we find... You know, we've got a straggler here, we've got a straggler
there,
and we put them together, Sam, and we build a team.
Yeah.
And that's, but the lads, I think the big thing is, and he sat across the table, the big thing with us is that we could generate and build teams. And that with building teams, you build spirit. And that spirit then, like I say, Stoke was different to West Brom, Stoke was different to Palace. At Stoke, they wanted to see a team go out there and work and chase and run and give absolutely everything. And if they did that and won games, well, the roof would come off.
I think that's all we want as fans generally. We want to just see players working as hard as they can. And I guess, is that in that mentality of kind of going at finding players, is that where you got such a good team bond from, do you think?
Like I said, because we didn't have the videos, because we didn't have the information when we first started, I'd be out most of the times. But I like I said, I had certain things that I would do. I'd have scouts. The great thing before I went to Gillingham, I had 4 great years at Priestfield. I had time off and I went and watched a lot of games myself. I went to a lot of lower league games, fourth division games then, third division games. And I knew when I went into Priestfield and we won, we actually got promoted the first year. They'd finished 91st in the league. And then we got promoted that first year. I was lucky because all the players were out of contract, but I knew... players. And you remember the free transfer
list,
sheets?
Yeah.
They used to come flooding
come
through.
Around, yeah.
I'd marked stuff off that, you know, if I got a club at the end of the season, I'd go for him. So there was an opportunity and a chance to actually show or profit from all the work that I'd done prior.
I love that. That's just going back to that scouting idea. It's just so incredible. Another thing that people have said that I've heard, Tony, you can confirm with. I love getting people on so we can just get the truth, Sam. Is it true you used to tell players that if it was windy, they weren't going to play on Saturday, even though, I mean, it was always windy in Stoke?
No, that's not true.
Who told you that one?
I'll tell you off camera which player told us that you said that.
My God.
Yes.
No, never.
Never.
Okay, we will tell you off camera which player that was.
Okay.
I'll get a nod. Yes, we will tell you. We'll tell you off camera. How do you feel about Stoke's current position, kind of teetering?
No, I think they've gone through a difficult stage. The great thing about that football club is the Coates family. And John has taken over the reins from Peter and has had a couple of years. And people have got to look at, you know, Peter Coates was absolutely fantastic. But it took him a long time to get that club promoted. It took him a long time to get it sorted out. And they've got to give John the same time. The money that the family has put into the football club is just extraordinary. Well, not just the football club, the area. You know, Bet365 employ more people in Stoke and Trent than any other business. And during Brexit, during the COVID, everybody got paid every penny. You know, they're that type of people. They, you know, but they've done fantastically well. And financially, obviously, they're very, very well off, the family. But
never gets publicised, that though, is it? Like,
hey, no, my goodness, Sam, do they support?
We've got, when you look at what Man City's done for
yes
Manchester and that particular area.
Yeah. But the coach have done that for Stoke.
You know, so... And what it does, you know, what a successful football club does for the town or the city is remarkable. The research at Bolton was that this wasn't my research. This was done by the directors one day. They wanted something off the council generated in, you're talking about, well, I left in 2007. So you're talking about it generated an extra maybe 25 to 35 million pounds a year.
Unbelievable.
Which was coming into the town more because of the success of the football club. I mean, I was staggered by that. Like, I mean, what it had done and what it had brought. But everybody recognises a town by its football club, doesn't it?
Look at Steve Gibson at Middlesbrough. Look how much money Steve is putting up for the time he's been a chairman there.
Still at it.
And he's still at it because he loves he doesn't just love the football club. He loves the area. He's got he's got an affiliation with that area. Yeah. And Peter's exactly John, Denise, they've got an affiliation with Stoke-on-Trent. And it's not just the football club, it's the area itself. And I, you know, there's not many of them left, Sam, is there?
No.
Yeah, football clubs really are the heart of communities. Of course, Stoke, we've talked about Stoke, but there's many of your other clubs as well, Tony. I mean, Ben Foster has said that he liked you at West Brom, that you were very, very honest.
Yeah.
A very honest manager at West Brom.
It's got me in trouble lots of times being honest and being too honest. But no, I enjoyed West Brom. I know Sam had a spell there as well. I took over and Jeremy Peace was chairman and everybody had warned me about Jeremy being, you know, difficult and hard to handle. I found him fantastic. We sat down. I can remember meeting him in London. We sat down and he drew a circle and in that circle he'd cut a bit off, like almost as he'd taken a chunk of cake out. Yeah. And he said, this is mine.
That's your bit.
Yeah. And that is yours. Don't come to me and ask for any more money. Get on with the job. And he never, ever, ever, ever interfered with the football. He was just absolutely fantastic. And we go out on a Friday, home games. He'd always come over and watch the home games on a Friday. I'd always go out and have a bite to eat with him. I thought he was very straight. I knew he was trying to sell a football club. I knew that he'd built it up for next to nothing into a club. I think he sold for over £200 million. So I knew all that was going on. He's very open and honest about it.
And sold it for £60 million.
Yeah, and then he said to me that that was the aim. Just stay in the Premiership. Keep me in the Premiership. That's all I want, Tom. Nothing else. Really, really. I lots of people.
Made more money out of West Brom than he made in his business, did he? What was his business, Tony? Was he accountants?
It must have been. He was brilliant with...
figures.
Yeah, figures. And you know, he had people around him as well. Mark and Richard were absolutely wonderful people. They were very... Sam was talking about people being together. Mm. Those three were very, very close together and worked together. There was no split in them. But they were good.
It's not really like that now because you rarely speak to the owner. You know, the owner, whether he liked toys football or whether he liked building up the business to sell it on, irrespective of what
you make a great point there. One of the great changes you were talking about, the great changes in football. When I started, there was a chairman and a secretary and me, and we run the football club. That there was just the three. When I was at Bournemouth, Keith McAllister, Norman Haywood, myself. There was a board of directors who'd come in and have a meeting once a month on a Friday or whatever, or Thursday.
You might do a board meeting.
Yeah, we'd have a board meeting. They'd have a good drink and everything else, and that was it. They'd let you get on. You have a look at it now. You have a look at the layers between the coach or the manager through to the owners. It's too great. And one of the biggest problems, I think, is that coaches are going on, managers are going in, or coaches, whatever you want to call them now. They're going in and they haven't got anybody managing and helping them upwards. They bring coaches in. Most of the coaches are good coaches and they can work on the grass. And I think there's got to be a change. Instead of bringing another coach in, I think they're better off bringing someone else, an experienced ex-manager, say Sam or someone like that, who can actually deal with the directors. But the big thing is, because these sporting directors, the big thing is, if the manager gets a sack, they know that the person who's working for them up there is going to get the sack as well. Because at the moment, you've got a lot of sporting directors who see a lot of managers off.
Yeah, they do.
And sometimes the recruitment has got nothing to do with the coach or the manager. I went to Madrid last week, and I spent a couple of days at Madrid with Ancelotti and watched them train. And the training session, it was a day before a game, was absolutely fantastic. Now, you're talking about some of the best players in the world. And he's not had to say a word, Sam. And afterwards, I said, oh, they were brilliant, Carlo. You know, they're unbelievable. You know, the tackling and everything. It's Sam, it was. And he went, the best players are.
Yeah. Have you got anything that you could share with us and Pep ahead of the Champions League quarterfinal, Tony?
No, nothing at all. but the point that you just said, the names that you're talking about, top players, his point was that's why they're top players.
Hey, well, by the way, he's one of the nicest men I've ever met in football.
A few people have mentioned going
Carlo,
over.
Carlo,
wow.
He's a wonderful man.
Yeah. What a man. Like, I mean,
still want to be in bad.
What a man, what a man. Yes. What, there's a song in that, isn't it? What a man. I mean, look at his track record. He's the most successful manager that's working in the world today.
He's going to get beaten this year, Sam, again. Again. Yeah. Yes, he is.
Yeah, great game, that one. Yeah. I hope it's as good as Liverpool, Man United.
Yeah, that was a great
game. That was the game of all games for me this season.
Really?
Oh, man, yeah. I thought it was the excellent, excellent, excellent competition that you would expect.
Were you there or TV?
The FA Cup? No, it was TV.
Load of action in both boxes.
But I'd gone to Man United the week before and watched Man United and Everton and gone, oh my God.
Awful.
Everton were the much better side.
Yeah.
Created more chances, more shots at goal. Manchester United sneaked through with two penalties. And I thought, I really feared for them.
Yeah.
And what a performance.
Yeah.
Well, Kobe Mainoo's got a call up for England talking about United. It was a question from one of our listeners. He said a late call up for England. Do you think that Gareth has called him up because there was such a big reaction to him not being called up?
No, I think he's called him up because
he's a good player.
He's a good player, and his injuries of some of the players that he wanted to call up, and said who is. I sincerely hope that Gareth's not being influenced by outside influences to call him. You've got to bat that away. You start falling in that.
Yeah,
in that
Gareth is an honest lad.
Yeah.
I think he's a genuine honest. I don't think Gareth would do anything like that. But I think the players, I think he's a tremendous talent. Tremendous talent. He's got great balance. You know, great players or good players. You know, their movement on the ball and off the ball. And he just seems so balanced.
He floats over the ground, doesn't he?
Yeah, he receives it, Sam. And he can open himself. Drops a shoulder. Nothing seems to bother him. He's a really, really good player. Looks a top, top player.
I just hope that this across the board again, there's this injury list
for internationals.
Every manager.
Oh, just actual injuries. I thought you mean for like international when they start dropping out.
Well, which is expanding into, and we've got the Euros coming up.
Yeah, just answer me one question. You know, when you started, how many physios did you have?
None.
How many players got injured? One sub mind.
Two or three.
A season,
A season.
How many times did you have to bring a sub on because someone was injured?
In seven subs at the beginning.
And we didn't have no sports science, did we?
And then we just had one sub, that was it.
Yeah.
So what does that tell us?
I'll tell you what it tells us, right? When we were brought up, we were brought up to last. So our development in our younger years was so much better than the kids today because we did not stop. We were out, we were playing, we were jumping, we were
climbing trees,
scrumping, spit.
What, scrumping?
Knock-a-door run, British bulldog, football, cricket, tennis, sprinting, athletics, swimming, table tennis, youth club.
Yeah.
Jumping up walls, breaking your arms, splitting your head up, going to hospital, getting stitched up. All of it. So by the time I got to Bolton at 15, I was a physical specimen far greater than any 15-year-old now.
I just think the resilience to
be able to cope with what was coming. Took me a while to get there, by the way, because you needed you needed a year or two to bring yourself from there to the level of football that you need to get. An adult level. I were playing adult football at 16. They just threw me straight in. The A team was
that's
adult
right.
football.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I played in the, The Gloucester League, which was a tough league at 15 years of age. And that was before we became apprentices. You had to last in that. But I just going back to Sam, I think the medical side and the improvement with clubs with on the medical side is absolutely fantastic. But I also think there's times where players can be pushed a little bit further. And again, that comes in, I think, to the manager knowing his players, knowing the basis of them and what they're made of. Some players are soft as tater and no, seriously,
that's mashed potato.
And as soon as they get a knock, they worry and they're concerned about it. It's just mentally.
And the physio doesn't help sometimes.
And the doctor
comes to you and goes, "He can't play Saturday." I said, "Why can't he play?" "Well, he's got a grade 2." "Well, what's a grade 2? "Well, it's a tear in his hamstring." "Oh, all right. Then what's the size of it?" He goes, "What do you mean? What size is it?"
"I know."
I said, "Well, no, is it 2 millimeters? Is it 10 millimeters? What is it? What's the size of the tear?" He goes, "Oh." I said, "Okay." I said, "How long will that be then?" "Well, it'd be 4 weeks." I said, "Oh, all right." I said, "Isn't that funny, like Kevin Nolan, yeah, had a much bigger tear. I was back in 2 weeks because he told me he was fit."
Johnny Evans.
Put a time on it.
Yeah, that's the worst thing.
Do not put a time on it.
Johnny Evans, we played at West Brom. I think I've told this story before. We played at West Brom. He picks up an ankle. I think it was an ankle or knee injury on the game. Our best player by a country mile. And we've got a big game on the Saturday. So we come in on the Monday. So the doc pulls me. Not sure Johnny will be fit. It, you know, he's in his mind.
Still playing, isn't he? Man United again.
In his mind, he's not going to play. So I said, leave him. Don't get involved with him. Leave him to me. Tuesday, go in. He's still feeling it. Wednesday, we're off, but he's in. Have a chat with him. What's it like, John? Still a bit sore. Thursday, come out and have a look what we're doing. I don't think I'm going to be, but just come out and watch what we're doing, John. Friday, exactly the same, comes out and watches what we're doing. Saturday, everybody turn up in their suits and everything else. And I walk in, got my team. Macaulay, Evans, Brunt, Fletcher, this, that, and the other. And I'll put it down. Give it to Kempy, the team sheet, and I'll walk out. Now, I can't see Johnny's reaction. Kempy comes right out, not in the manager's room, comes in, he went, "I'll give it a minute." And all of a sudden, opens the door. Gaffer is Johnny. He walked in. I said, I went, "Johnny, just give us 10 minutes, mate. If you get injured, brilliant, but give us 10 minutes because that gives everybody a lift." Best player on the pitch, Johnny Evans, 90 minutes. Absolutely. But not because of any other reason, but mentally, he thought he was going to do himself more damage. And that's, I think, when you have to step in and take the responsibility for them.
Because you're both really well known for being good man managers. Is that all part of getting to know the individuals, understanding what makes them tick, when you put an arm around them or when you say...
In my time, I would knock on the manager's door. I don't know whether I've told you this story before. I'd knock on the manager's door when I'd been dropped because the team sheet went up on a Friday at Bolton Wanderers. Yeah. Ian Greaves was the manager. And I wasn't on it. And I've gone... Got Shane's like him in because the team sheet first team, reserve team, A team, B team went up on Saturday. So I come in. So Ian Greaves had just had a shower in his room and he got his dressing towel and dressing gown on. He got his feet on the desk and he was smoking a cigar. And I go, "Can I see you, Gaffer?" He goes, "No." I said, "Why? Why? I want to see you now." He said, "You can't, I'm busy." Yeah. And I went, well, "I'm telling you now.
Get out.
I'm busy. Come and see me Monday."
So
as years went on, we're having a meal when he's left and he'd return having a meal, like you mean. And he said, "Remember when you came storming in?" He said, "Learn that when you become a manager."
Yeah.
Don't accept them coming to see you straight after you've left them at the team. Let them wait till Monday when they've calmed down.
Yeah.
And then you can have a much better conversation about it. And I remember that from that day and use it a lot. Like, I mean, I actually put it in the club when I get there. "Look, you can come and see me after the game on Monday. Don't come knocking on my door if I've left you out.
Kempe used to, and he'd never tell me this, but only since we finished. Kempe used to talk to the players and say, if you want to go and see the gaffer, come see me first, and I'll let you know what mood he's in.
I like that. Right, I've got a couple more. Is it true? I feel like we should have called this episode Tony Pulis, Is It True? Okay, is it true, Tony Pulis, that James McLean once turned up to West Brom with a broken hand because he'd had a white-collar boxing fight?
Most probably with James. You know, he was a fantastic lad, James. Fit as a fiddle. I like James. He took a lot of stick for his views and everything. But we've got to understand that his family were really entrenched in what was going on in Ireland at the time. But as a kid, just a fabulous, fabulous lad. A lovely family, looked after his family. We used to have, we had a fella in at West Brom, one of the Midlands top boxing champions.
Yeah.
Can't remember his name off the top of my head. And he would do little sessions in the gym. And he came to me after one and he said, you know what? James could have been a professional boxer.
Really?
He said, his hands are so quick. But fit.
So you never argued with him then, Tony?
No, never. He was always on my side. But he was one of the fittest lads I ever worked with, James. Great lad.
Still doing well, isn't he? At Wrexham, I think he's at. Okay, another one. Tony Pulis, is it true? Ricardo Fuller.
You've had more is it true questions than anybody
ever gets,
you
know. You really
this is the first. This is great.
It is really, isn't it?
I'm interested in the answers as well.
We should do this more often.
I think you're right.
Sam.
Round the quick fire. Is it true?
Is it true?
Yeah. Is it true?
Get our subscribers to send another one in.
Yeah,
is it true?
Did Ricardo Fuller once bend the truth around going away on international duty?
Yep. We had... We were in the championship. I think we had about five or six games left. Mick was at Wolves and we were playing. They were third or fourth in the league. We were second in the league. West Brom with Tony. Tony Mowbray was top.
Tony Mowbray, yeah.
So in a massive game, we'd sold out. We sold 6,000-7,000 tickets for the game on the Saturday, but it was in between the international break. So we'd had 2 weeks to prepare. So we had four or five people going off on international duty. Kempe would always check. I don't know if Sam would get Brownie to do this, but Kempe would always check where they were.
Oh,
then we'd
yes.
give it to the physios and make sure they were all right. They were in touch with them all the time. But the great thing was on this week, the games, they had a game on the Tuesday and a game on the Saturday. So we had a free week to prepare for the Wolves game. So Rick's got his bag. We've played a game. We've won a game on the Saturday. He's got his bag and his suit holder. Where are you going, Rick? I'm going to Jamaica. I've got a game. Kempe. Goal Kempe over. Kempe, but I thought you said Jamaica. No, they ain't got no international games this week. So he's now in my room. So Kempe, I couldn't find a thing, Ricardo. Where are you playing? Nah, we got this friendly match. Gaffer, you don't. You know, this, that, and the other. Da, da, da. In the end, he goes, listen, we have got a game. I'd like to go back. I'll be back Monday. So, okay, Rick, no problems. I said to Kemp, he was special, Rick, for us at the time.
Yeah, he's talented,
so,
wasn't he?
So talented.
Yeah.
You know, we'll let him go. We'll let him have his week in Jamaica. So we never knew what he was going to come back like mine. But anyway, so he goes over there. So the week goes by. On the Monday, doesn't turn up. So, all right, give him Monday. Tuesday, don't turn up. So I'm onto the physio. I'm onto Kempe. I'm going potty. Wednesday we have the day off. Thursday we're in training, still not turned up, Sam. We're trying everything. We can't even get in touch with him. On the Friday, he rings Dave the physio up and says something like he's got caught in Miami, he didn't have a passport or didn't have the right passport, so he had to go back and this, that and the other. So this is most probably the biggest game of the season. We win this game. I think we take Wolves out of a chance of them finishing in the top
Good.
Two. So, and he's not turned up all week. So anyway, on the Saturday, we're having pre-match at the Bet365 Stadium and then driving 40 minutes to the game. He walks in, Sam, he's got his tracksuit on, he's got his hat on the side of his head. He looks as though he's had a really
Deadbeat,
good,
yeah.
He looks as though he's had a real good fortnight. So he walks, none of the lads speaking to him. So he walks straight through. There's a little table at the top of the room. He sits there, has his eggs and beans or whatever Ricardo used to have. Not said a word. So I'm with Kempe and I'm going to hammer him. I'm going to absolutely rip him. Kempe's gone, no, don't. We might need him. Might need him. See the state he's in. He said, Gaffer, leave him.
Why did you put him on the bench?
So he comes past. Hi, Gaff. So I don't acknowledge him. He goes on the bus. He sits at the back. No one's talking to him. So we get to the ground, put him on the bench. We kick off. We go a goal up. I think Rory scores a goal. Mama makes Rory, but vice versa. Then Liam scores. Then they score, and they score another one. And second half, Sam, they're down the slope.
Yeah.
They are battering us. They're getting balls into the box. We've got Shawcross and whoever it was, 40, I think, at the time. Heading battleships out of the water. You know, it's like coming in and you're thinking, oh, my God. So Kempe goes, get him on. Time to get him on. I say, you sure? I said, we need everybody, everybody. All hands to the pumpkin. He said, get him on. He said, he can do something.
Hold the ball, dribble it, take it.
So I go, Ricardo.
Relieve the pressure.
Go and get warmed up. So he runs up the little slope. So I'm watching the game. I'll turn around and look at him. He's stretching at the top of the pitch, talking to their supporters. So I said to Kempe, he's having a great time up there. Kempe, look at him. So Kempe goes, get him back. Get him on. So pull him off. Pull him down. Rick, come on, goes on. We had a corner out. He picks it up just in front of where the dugouts are, or deeper. Runs all the way down the pitch. Beats three people. Smashes it into the corner. Runs all the way. All the players are over him. This, that, and the other. Unbelievable. Unbelievable goal. You couldn't believe it. 2 minutes later, he does exactly the same. We win 4-2. So I'm absolutely, I'm washed. It's the end of the season.
Kempe, I've got my new contract.
Kempe used to make all the decisions for me, so he told me. I got my cap on, Sam. I take my cap off, and I am just, it's like the summer had just started to come in. I am washed. Yeah. I'm sat in
shattered.
The corner. Sat in the corner, Sam.
You've drained.
Been there, mate. Drained. Yeah. Absolutely drained.
Oh, it feels.
Great result.
Yeah.
So delighted for the players.
Relieved.
And over in the corner, there's Rick, and he's getting all the...
Dancing away.
And the players are all over him. So he walks over to me, and I'm sat down thinking, I don't need you, Rick. And he comes over, and he puts his hand around me. He goes, Gaff. What, Rick? He says, listen. He says, you worry too much. That's why you got no hair. He just come up, walked back across the dressing room, sat back down, and
brilliant.
And that was Ricardo.
Brilliant.
Did we ever find out where he was?
No, and I didn't want. Didn't want to ask.
He was on a bender in Miami. Wasn't
we've all had that scenario.
You've been on a bender in Miami?
No. Players coming back late. Like we used to. Yeah. Doofy was. It was.
Nightmare.
Purgatory Doofy coming. Joe was stopped back in Paris, didn't he, on the way back, like from Senegal. Said he can't get a flight direct back to Manchester. Like, I mean, he just.
Yeah.
Walked out and like.
Yeah, they were.
He was like. Yeah.
Yeah. And as a manager, you worried more about them. You know, I used to try and watch the games, or I'd be on the phone to Dave, the physio, straight away, because Dave had, after games, they had to ring Dave up. To make sure everything was all right. When I was at West Brom, we had four or five Irish lads, Northern Irish lads, and Michael used to let them have a couple of not good nights out, I think, by the looks of things. And again, them coming back in, you know, I used to think, oh my goodness, I just hope they're...
The worst time for me, Tony, was African Nations Cup.
Yeah.
Was it January?
Yeah.
We had to send a member of staff with them and have a private jet waiting in case they got knocked out.
Yeah.
So if they got knocked out, they were all like staying an extra day and partying. They were straight on that plane on the way back. Like, you mean? Like, they got we can't afford this. Like, what do you mean we can't afford it?
Yeah.
I said, we can have them back for Saturday, playing on Saturday. We'd had four or five. So any one coming back early was a major bonus. You got, you know, Abdullah Faye, Doofy.
Yeah. I had Abdullah.
JJ Okocha. You got, you know, we had so many.
What great lad he was, Abdullah.
I don't know. Abdullah, yeah. Still lives in Bolton.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. Abdullah Faye. Yeah.
Right. We always finish up with some quick fire questions, Tony. Yeah. And I'm going to push you to try and make them a bit quick fire this week. Usually we let them rumble, but I think we'll try and do quick fire. So, the first one, Tony, you used to play centre-backs as full-backs. Do you think you were the inspiration behind Pep Guardiola and Arteta?
Of course.
Yes, I agree, Sam.
I agree too.
I like that. That was quick. Okay. Wales, big games coming up. Well, big game, possibly games coming up. This will go out on a Thursday. Wales play on the Thursday night. What are you thinking about Wales' chances?
I think they'll win both games. They're both at home. I think they'll win the first game, and the second game will be a little bit more difficult, but because they're two home games, they'll win.
Who are they
and
playing?
They'll qualify.
Finland on Thursday night in the semi-final of the playoffs. Yeah. And then if they
Poland,
win that...
most probably. It'll be Poland.
Good luck.
Do you think they'll get through?
Well, we all want... Well, I've not got that. I want them all through.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I want them all, like England, Ireland, Scotland, and Wales. Me. You know what I mean? We'd love to see them there.
Yeah.
I don't. Okay. I'm not as nice as you, Sam. We know at the start you were talking about the nice life balance that you've got now. I feel like maybe, what about an international job? Would you take the Wales job? Because that'd still give you a bit of balance.
Well, the Wales job is being looked after very, very good at the moment by Robert. He's done a fantastic job there. And hopefully, fingers crossed, they qualify. So by the time that came up again...
It'd be brilliant, that, because without Gareth Bale, if they qualify, that is...
He's done brilliant.
Real achievement. Yeah. Because irrespective of what you say, you know, Gareth's influence was he got them, however many times they've got there, he was the major influence on why they actually got there with his ability. You know, and what he
special
was, well, a bit like you were saying before, he'd come on and do something brilliant and turn the game in your favour. That's not, they haven't got that anymore.
Yeah.
And it's all about the team and the organisation of the team and the tactics of the team. So if we
Page
get some there, major achievement.
Yeah.
As it is just with Clark at Scotland.
Yeah.
You know, turning that Scotland around, you know.
Very much so.
Yeah, best of luck to Wales. I really hope Wales get through, absolutely. Is there a club that you have been, that approached you or that you were nearly went to that maybe nobody knows about that now you can tell us?
Well, there's been lots of opportunities and chances, but I've always been the bigger clubs. I've always been quite set at the club I've been in at the time. I even had an offer from a good club abroad as well, but you know that was I was set at the club I was.
Give us who then?
Yes, thanks. I'm glad you said that.
I wanted to say that. Give us who? Come on.
No. Go on. Next one.
So Sheffield Wednesday, Plymouth, Stoke, all teetering.
Yeah.
Which one are you worried about? Which one do you think could be in the most danger, both of you?
Blimey. I'm a little bit concerned about Plymouth because Plymouth, they have to win their own games. Their away form is not brilliant. And the last three games, I think they've lost the last three home games.
Should have made Carl Robinson the manager.
Yeah, that worries me. And I had a great time at Plymouth, really. Love the area, love the people down there.
I spoke to Trevor East, he's a director there, and I said, Trevor, please tell your owner to sign Carl Robinson on this man's record. His ability is far greater than, but, you know, always deserved a chance in the Championship, if not higher, like, you know. So, obviously, Trevor hasn't got the choice to make the choice, but could only recommend him. But I don't think they even interviewed him.
Yeah.
Okay, last question for today.
Yeah.
Which team would win? Your prime Bolton or your prime Stoke?
Mine.
Tony?
Let's finish on that, eh?
Tony! It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Tony Peters, thank you so much for being here. No, Sam, thank you. You're back next week.
Okay, Natalie, yes, no problem.
See you.
Thank you to all our subscribers. And again, keep logging into No Tippy Tappy Football. And of course, thank you to Willie Mill.
Thank you for listening and watching. I've got a hair in my mouth now to another episode of No Tippy Tappy Football brought to you by William Hill. We'll be back next week.